It's time now for our Ask an Expert segment. Every weekday at this time on KCBS, we're giving you direct access to top experts in various fields related to the pandemic. As we see another spike in COVID cases nationwide and indeed here in California and even the Bay Area, Stanford Medicine is releasing a framework, a look at how to bounce back during the pandemic in a safe manner based on science. They're calling it R3, which stands for Recover, Restore, and Reopen. To answer your questions, I'm joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Mary Leonard, chair of the Department of Pediatrics at Stanford Medicine and one of the architects of this framework. Dr. Leonard, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, so tell us a little about where this came from. Obviously, we've all been sort of running at warp speed for about 8 months now, but what was the genesis of this concept and how did it come together?
Oh, thank you. So that's a great question. Well, last spring, you know, as the office buildings emptied out and everybody ordered us to stay in shelter into place, our physicians, our scientists, our hospital executives, everybody really just leapt into action. And in the early weeks and months of this, we were very much focused on the science of testing, making it available, about PPE, the hospital, protecting our healthcare workers. But then as it started to unfold, we realized that we had expertise across the entire Stanford campus that had just pivoted to thinking about this pandemic, people who maybe had never done any sort of work in this space. And we realized there was this extraordinary expertise. And so in the beginning, it was our physicians and, you know, our psychiatrists worried about the mental health. But then our epidemiologists started really thinking about the health disparities. And then we had computer scientists and data scientists and people doing artificial intelligence or biomedical informatics. We had people doing work in health policy, health economics, education, all starting to think about the pandemic. And we realized there was this incredible expertise that could sort of support and help each other in this work, but also really start to provide an important service to our community. So what we did in the early months was we had about 14 or 16 different experts representing these different areas, and then we also had people thinking about environmental health and safety, government affairs. We started getting those groups together to present their work to each other and to build on each other's work, and we recognized that we had this incredible resource that could be very valuable to our community, to the individuals, to the stakeholders, government, foundation, industry. And we wanted to make people aware of this, and we really very much want to know how can we help? How can we help everybody that's struggling with reopening the same way Stanford is? So the R3 framework, as you said, is Recover, Restore, and Reopen. It's a website, and we've taken all the different topics that we're tackling and created this framework, and there's sort of three main pillars, and one is just how do you contain and control COVID-19, and, you know, as you said in your opening remarks, as we're seeing the numbers going up, we need to get more sophisticated in expanding testing strategies. How do we create a public health surveillance system? How do you do contact tracing at scale? Those sorts of things, especially with computer science and the expertise here, we think we can help with some of those things. So that's sort of one pillar, is containing and controlling. Another pillar is how do we just adapt and how do we thrive in this new normal? So for instance, I'm a pediatrician and we're really learning how powerful telehealth can be. But then we're also working psychiatrists who are thinking about how do we use technology around mental health, and then our education experts thinking about the school. So that's the pillar that about how do we adapt. And then the third pillar is how do we safeguard and support our community? So those are our most vulnerable populations and the terrible health disparities, or, you know, how do we align with the government? So under these three pillars on our website, you can read under each of them. There's four different sections, and you can go on the website and read the interviews with the experts. You can learn how Stanford is approaching this. You can learn what we think we need to do in partnership with the government, but you also can click and see, learn more about the experts, but there's also great videos. So, for example, in my department in pediatrics, we've had hour-long grand round sessions with mental health experts or with people serving vulnerable communities, all of those lectures are recorded and can be found through this website.
Yeah, it's so really a great asset, I have to say. And I've only scratched the surface of it because there's a lot there. But you touched on something I wanted to ask you about in a little more depth, and that is this. It's like the world's largest Venn diagram, right? Every little bit of expertise, but they all overlap in interesting ways that maybe aren't fully being taken advantage of. For example, you want to send kids back to school. You need to know a lot about a lot of things, including indoor air, including diet. I mean, there's so many places of intersection here.
Yeah, you're right. It couldn't be more complicated and sort of these matrices of how it all connects. I think that's sort of where the magic happened. When we started getting these people in the same Zoom room, so to speak, it was exhilarating. I mean, it really truly was, because the sparks were flying. You've got somebody over here who's, you know, chairing a committee making, that's part of guidance to the nationally around vaccines, talking to somebody who's created a health app to monitor patient symptoms around the country and then wants to figure out if they're getting the vaccine. I mean, these are people whose worlds don't normally intersect. And that's where we really realized there was something happening that was really exciting. And the next step is now connecting with the community and with the government and with the stakeholders to make it to have an even a further impact. But you're absolutely right. You know, the environmental health folks that monitor air quality, thinking about asthma and the fires, now, exactly to your point, are can become very interested in air quality in different indoor environments. So many people who didn't know each other. It's fun for me because I get to make the introductions. I know a little bit about what they're all doing. I can only scratch the surface. I couldn't do justice to really any of these topics. But I have a good sense of where the opportunities are, and the introductions are the fun part. And then you just sit back and watch the magic happen.
Well, I think it was Churchill who said, never let a crisis go to waste. And
yes.
And so now we have the opportunity, though, and maybe this isn't the right moment, because as we've been saying, you know, the numbers are climbing again. It's getting scary again. We have travel advisories coming out. But is there the chance, is everybody able to take a breath in the medical world where you come from and say, okay, we can manage that part. What do we do next? Or do you feel like we're not quite there yet?
No, I think we're definitely feeling more confident. I think for us, the real test was the surge that we saw in the early weeks after the 4th of July weekend. And we definitely saw a surge. And in the children's hospital, we had multiple admissions in rapid succession, really all from our very low-income communities, very crowded environments. It was very clear to us what was happening there and really heightened our commitment to the disparities. But I think we have our command center, our guidelines, our tools, our tracking of PPE in a very good place. And certainly we're watching. I mean, every single morning we get a report how many kids are in the hospital with COVID, how many adults are in the hospital with COVID. But our sort of rapid response team within the hospital is really quite fine-tuned, and occupational health, they're all really humming along. So in that case, I think we, within our walls, feel like we're well equipped, that we can get through the next surge. But I think we're very committed now to how do we use artificial intelligence and big data and the other expertise Stanford has across the state and across the country to really try to help, predict, to get better modeling, better predictions, so that other people can be prepared as well.
Okay, well, let's get to some questions then, and reminding anyone listening that we're talking with Dr. Mary Leonard, chair of the Department of Pediatrics at Stanford Medicine, one of the architects of the framework they're calling R3, Recover, Restore, and Reopen, a collaborative effort by a lot of experts from within the Stanford community, not just medical people, but others as well. And you can send those questions to us at askus@kcbsradio.com. You just mentioned a moment ago the disparity you saw in admissions back during the summer, and this first question comes from someone saying, considering the fact that we see a wide disparity in how the pandemic has affected people depending on socioeconomic status, what sorts of strategies do you think could be employed to deal with that unfortunate reality?
That is such a good question. So some of the things that we've done is we've gone into the Central Valley, into immigrant populations, and we've provided testing. I mean, I think part of it is that the onus is really on us to be as proactive as we can to really get out and focus on the communities that we aren't reaching as well as we should. Another really, really important strategy relates to making sure that all of our communities have access to the vaccine. And that's something that we're really have a laser focus on right now. In fact, one of my faculty is chairing the national committee that normally really focuses on vaccine effectiveness and safety, but very much is focused on access. How do we build trust with some of our most vulnerable communities? You know, there's a lot of excitement about the vaccine that was just announced, you know, Pfizer's vaccine, but I'm learning about something called cold chain, which is it has to be kept at 100 degrees below zero from sort of door to door. And how do you keep a vaccine at 100 degrees below zero and get it out into your vulnerable communities? So that is a huge focus right now for us, is really getting into those communities. Another thing focus that we have is around providing telehealth. And so we're looking both at the children's hospital and the adult hospital. We've created a health equity dashboard so that we can see which, you know, our patient populations in terms of what language they speak, where do they live, what kind of insurance they have. Can we get telehealth? Our children and our adults, they need mental health services, they need, you know, medical services. And if they don't have a device or they don't have Wi-Fi in their community, we can't reach them. And so the sort of opportunities we have as we start to think about what we've learned here and how we look outward is we think the case could be made that Wi-Fi, we should change federal law, that everybody should have access to Wi-Fi. Broadband should be treated like a vital infrastructure, like a service road. So there's many different ways that we think at a policy level that's going to be our most effective strategy to reaching the entire community. Okay. And I think it's just laid bare the terrible health inequities that many of us knew were here, but really has made it a crisis.
Pretty hard to ignore now. Next question. It has to do with vaccines. This is kind of specific, but it does get into the area of the sorts of choices people are going to have to make. Are we going to be forced to take a vaccine? Could I choose which one to get? Could I choose to wear a mask forever instead of getting a vaccine?
Yeah, I think at this point we're very far from at a point where we will say vaccines are mandated. I mean, there are situations in the school systems where kids are required to have documented they've had the vaccine, but I don't think we're anywhere near the point where we think that's going to be mandated. And yes, there will be multiple vaccines that are available, and I think it's going to be really important for our experts in vaccine. This is going to be so critical to really be able to convey accurate, consistent information about the vaccine safety and efficacy, because we believe the biggest challenge we're going to have right now is trust. And there's some really concerning data that if you go out and interview communities and say, if we had a vaccine and we told you it was safe and effective, would you definitely take it? And the numbers are not very reassuring.
No, they're not. They're not.
They're
barely above 50%, right?
Yeah, and actually in some demographics, they're below 20%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty alarming. So I think we're very far from anything being mandatory, but the huge onus is on us and the government and to come together and to communicate in a very consistent manner that helps to build the trust. We understand that that's probably our biggest challenge.
Next question. Do you think we're going to see a future where social distancing remains the norm even after vaccines are a reality? And if so, what are the implications for society?
Well, that's a really good question. I think, I think there may be, if you look at other crises, after 9/11 and with the way we went through airports changed, I'm sure there will be some things that are with us, that will stay with us. But my hope would be well after the vaccines are in place, and it may take a couple years, you know, that we may not shake hands the same way we used to, and, you know, there may be some sort of things that change subtly, but my hope is ultimately we will get back to something very close to normal. One of my colleagues was talking about some of the things we learned from the pandemic in 1918 and said, you know, this is sort of a silly example, but after that they stopped having spittoons at the entrances to restaurants, right? So
yeah.
There may be some things we do where we think, oh, that wasn't common sense. And those things may change in the long term. But I think at the next couple of years, get the vaccine out, get to the place where we can get something close to normal.
This next question says, it's good to hear someone's taking a broad look at how to move forward, but I'm wondering how any kind of plan would be implemented, considering the widely varying federal, state, and local governmental roles in America. What's your thinking on that?
Oh, that's exactly right. You know, we have patients in our hospital from many, many different counties, and each of the different counties has different rules. And, you know, sometimes what our rules are, say, around visitors are different than UCSF because we're in different counties. And it's even more complex because the data we try to collect, some of them do it online, some of it do it by fax. It is very chaotic and it is very fragmented. That, no question, is our biggest barrier. And I think that's what's going to require, and this is where we're so grateful that we have a presence on some of the task forces and the committees that the governor's leading, is mission critical for us being able to have any sort of a coordinated response, is that we start having a great deal of much more consistency. And I think on the website on Restore, you can see things like the National Daily Health Survey, this app that was developed here. If we can get public health officials to help us scale it in a consistent way across all the counties in California, and then to start to link that to vaccine data, it could be very powerful. But that is a huge barrier. But, you know, Stanford, you know, one of our biggest strengths is computer science, and I think the technology is going to be the answer.
Okay.
And we have so many apps that you can read about on the R3 website for all kinds of things.
And by the way, for our listeners, we'll be sure to provide a link to that website when we post today's story on our Ask an Expert section at kcbsradio.com. You know, you mentioned technology. This next question says, considering the cesspool social media has become, and I think we're talking about all the misinformation and disinformation in this question, the questioner wants to know, how do you think science and reason can combat that?
Okay, now you've really stumped me. All the questions up until now. I don't have a great answer. I do think that if the Stanford community, and if we can work with all the other health systems in California, and we are working very closely with UCSF and Kaiser and coordinated messaging, I think all I hope we can do is if we can speak with one very clear, concise, consistent voice. I have to say, at the national level, it will be such a game changer for us if we don't have such mixed messaging coming not just from the White House, but from all the different governors around the country. That really has wreaked havoc. And when in one state you can go into a bar and another state they aren't even doing elective procedures, I think that has contributed to the lack of trust and the cacophony related to social media. So I think it's all very mixed together. But I'm really hoping this new national COVID task force is spectacular in terms of its membership. And the hope is that we can drown out a lot of this other mess noise if we can speak with a single voice in a much more consistent fashion.
Well, listen, thanks for the time this morning. We'll let you get back to the business of keeping people healthy
okay.
and safe. I'd really appreciate the chance to talk with you, Dr. Leonard. Thanks.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. That's Dr. Mary Leonard. She's the chair of the Department of Pediatrics at Stanford Medicine. One of the architects of this framework they're calling R3, Recover, Restore, and Reopen. And we'll provide a link to a rather lengthy series of think pieces and interviews and videos that Dr. Leonard referenced. You'll find it at kcbsradio.com/askanexpert, where we post a story each day following our Ask an Expert segment, and it will always include the full audio of each day's episode. Also, a reminder that if you use radio.com or the radio.com app, you can always rewind, replay live radio, pause it, and go back and listen to answers over and over, and use the same app with its function of passing it on, where you can send a piece of KCBS. It could be Ask an Expert or any other part of programming you hear onto others so they can hear it as well.